Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back. Well, that song, Just a Gigolo, what does it have in common with the following songs? I've Got a Crush on You, Embraceable You, I Got Rhythm, Georgia on My Mind, On the Sunny Side of the Street, and Dream a Little Dream of Me. Well, all of those songs this January have entered the public domain. What does that mean? Who would know the answer to that question? My next guest certainly will. He is known as the rock and roll lawyer. Jim Jesse is not only a seasoned lawyer, but he's a musician and an educator in things relating to law and music. He has taught thousands of lawyers about copyright and music-related issues, and he used to be general counsel for Cool Music Network, a 24-hour music video television network. Welcome to the show, Jim. How are you?
Karen, I'm great. Glad to be here.
This is really an interesting topic. There are so many areas where law and music overlap, and let's get to all of them if we can. What does it mean when a piece of music comes into the public domain?
So public domain, as the term implies, means that it's in the public owns it. Anybody can use it. Okay. So those particular musical works are now, you know, you can cover the song, you can record it and not have to get permission. You can, anything that's in the public domain is free to use, be it a book, a picture, music. Although I'd actually make sure it's in the public domain. There are websites. There's pdinfo.com. That you can check and verify that something is in the public domain.
So what happens that makes these pieces of music come into the public domain? Is it just a certain number of years and it automatically loses its copyright protection?
So per the Constitution, copyrights can only last for limited times, and Congress has defined it. Typically, it's for the author's life plus 70 years after the author's death. If there's more than one author, the 70 years begins to run upon the death of the last author. So every year on January 1, new things, not just music, but books, films go into the public domain. Apparently, briefly, the movie It's a Wonderful Life went into the public domain. I think that's why it was on TV all the time. So, yeah, every year, copyrights don't last forever, and new things go into the public domain every year.
Just generally speaking, before a piece of music goes into the public domain, what are the obligations of a person who might want to use that music, not just to listen to it? Of course, that's something that you can do and enjoy it on your own. But if you want to use it in a dance club or you want to use it in a movie, tell me where do you have to have attribution and payment of money? And then where does that money go to people who are probably long gone?
Wow, that's a good question. A lot of things there. I guess I'll start at the beginning. When you record a song, there's two copyrights. There's the musical work, the song, the melody, the lyrics, and then there's the recording. Okay, you played for me Just a Gigolo as recorded by David Lee Roth. Now, that sound recording is not in the public domain, but the original musical work is in the public domain. Generally speaking, WGN, for example, has licenses with BMI and ASCAP to play music on the air. By the way, I'm from the South Side. I'm from Beverly, so I grew up listening to WGN.
Did not know that.
Great to be here. Yeah. Went to St. Rita High School.
Welcome home.
Before I moved to Kansas City. Yeah. So it's a pleasure. It's an honor to be on. Anyway, bars, restaurants that have live or pre-recorded music need licenses typically with what are called performing rights organizations, BMI and ASCAP, and then they, in theory, pass the royalties on to the songwriter. So highly summarized, that is it. Now, you can cover any song you want. You can play any song live you want if you're a cover band. I've seen lots of cover bands, throughout the years, and, you know, the venue generally needs the license.
Got it. And if you violate that, what are the possible ramifications?
Well, you could, ASCAP and BMI, which are the two largest performing rights organizations in the country. I mean, you can come and, you know, they can come and find you and demand that you, you know, I mean, you know, obviously you say, hey, you don't, we notice you're playing music, you don't have a license, please get a license. You know, worst case scenario, obviously they sue you. It usually doesn't come to that. I just had a client call me. It's not just music, Karen. I just had a client call me last week. They showed some UFC fight without a public license, and the promoter, somebody, was calling the bar asking, you know, so, you know, you don't want to do that. You want to get the proper licenses in place before you have music or even live television events.
And I'm going to add to it, even though we're not really on that direct topic today, I've had so many callers, listeners from WGN say, hey, posted something on Facebook. It was an image. I guess it was copyrighted. I got a letter from a lawyer in Washington, and they're threatening to sue me for $1,200 because I didn't get permission. And we're seeing more and more of that. Are you seeing a lot of that going on now?
Yeah, that happens with photographs quite a bit. There's like Getty Images and entities like that that will, they must embed something in them so that they can track where the images are at. So yeah, be careful with photographs. You know, the best answer is take your own photograph or use stock images that you're allowed to use. I have seen some of that. You know, with music, generally speaking, most music is pre-cleared on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and things like that. Pictures, be especially careful, though. Always use pictures where you know you have permission, or take your own picture.
Makes sense, because you don't want to be on the receiving end of that because, you know, again, some of these firms are threatening, but maybe they're not going to bring the lawsuit, but you don't want to have to hire a lawyer, which could be thousands of dollars, and go down that route. Before we take a break,
right.
We're here with Jim Jesse. He's the rock and roll lawyer. He is exactly the place where law and music sort of collide, and he really educates people all over the country on these types of issues. Before we go further, because I want to talk about AI in music, and I want to talk about music plagiarism, which is a real issue of interest to me, I want to define some terms: copyright, trademark, intellectual property. Let's start with copyright. What is a copyright, and is it a formal, must it be a formal process?
No, you have a copyright once you create something. The law says you put it in a tangible medium of expression. So, for example, with music, you record it. With a book, you write it down, or a poem or whatever. Picture, you take it. I mean, copyrights can be pictures, books, plays, music. Architectural works even are copyrightable. Computer software, obviously videos, motion pictures, etc. Dance, you know, things you see in a museum also are copyrighted. So you can formally copyright it, and there's certain legal protections from it, but really you just need to create it first. And then you have a copyright. You can copyright it formally. Go to copyright.gov for much more information on that.
Jim, if I write a song and I want to copyright it, do I need a lawyer, or is it user friendly? Is it okay and easy to go to the website and do this yourself?
Yes, I think it is. Karen, I'm sure your song would be very good too. I think, yes, it is easy.
You have no idea how unmusical I am.
I'm happy to have people pay me to do it. But yes, you can do it yourself. The instructions are pretty straightforward. And so, yeah, I tell people all the time, just do it yourself. You know, what's the title of the work? When was it created? Has it been published? I mean, it's pretty, who are the authors? That's the main thing. So you have to figure out, you know, who wrote the song. You know, I wrote most of my stuff pretty, you know, by myself, but you know, music's collaborative and most things are. So yeah, you just need some very basic information. And yes, to answer your question, it's all online. The last step is you upload whatever it is you're copywriting.
We're talking to Jim Jesse. He's the rock and roll lawyer. Before we take a break and come back and talk about AI and music plagiarism, Jim, can you give out your contact information for my listeners quickly?
Yeah, my website, I mean, probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is my website, Rock and Roll. Just Google Rock and Roll Law, and you can find me on my website and reach out to me that way.
If anyone has a question, give us a call here, 312-981-7200. Otherwise, we'll be back on the other side of the news. Original music by our guest, Jim Jesse. He's a musician, he's a lawyer, and he's a music educator. He talks to people across the country, educating them on issues and the intersection of music and the law. Thank you for holding and welcome back. I have a texter who just heard that you are originally from Beverly, something I did not know, and said, she said, go St. Rita Mustangs. I hope that means something to you. Okay.
That's great, yes.
Also, I have a texter who wanted to know, can you have your guest address the issue of bootleg music? And he says, bootleg music coming from Europe in the United States, and I'm going to also ask about bootleg music from the U.S. being played in Europe. What do you do when music is being played out of the country in violation of copyright laws? Is it something that you can effectively stop?
Now, it's very difficult. I will say this about, you know, and I'm sure we've all been to concerts and half the audience is watching it through their phone or recording it. It actually is technically a copyright violation, not only to record it. I mean, no one's going to, you know, bust you for that. But to post it online is a copyright violation, okay, because you're reproducing and distributing copyrighted work. So don't do that. If you put it up on YouTube, you know, odds are it'll be knocked down or taken down if you're even allowed to put it up. I don't know about European law, what the differences are between that. I concentrate mainly on U.S. law. But I do know that, you know, if it's for your personal use and you record a snippet of a show, fine. Just don't post it online. I mean, unless it's your show or somebody very local that they won't mind doing that.
Makes sense.
Plus, enjoy the show.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's more important to get it on their phone than to actually enjoy it. Oh, these days. Let's talk about music plagiarism. I'm constantly fascinated by the different lawsuits that get brought. I saw one just recently brought about Stairway to Heaven. Why they waited so long is odd.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about, I'm going to play some music that is kind of the one that always gets talked about, which is the My Sweet Lord by George Harrison and the He's So Fine.
Yeah.
And I'll play that in a little bit to see if our listeners can, what their opinion is about, was this plagiarism? But given the fact that there's only a certain number of chords and musical notes on the piano, when does a song cross over and become plagiarism or just motivated or inspired by other music?
Well, Karen, that's why there's lawyers, I guess.
Right.
That's a great point, though, and I talk about this in my course. I mean, I play guitar, only 12 notes in the Western scale. Certain chords sound good together, and lots of songs are built upon the same chord progressions, and you can only sing so many notes within those chords. So I think the odds of things sounding alike are just, you know, as time goes on, just increase. You know, you can certainly be inspired by something. I mean, technically, it's copyright. The plaintiff would have to prove that the defendant heard the song, had access to it, and that there is, quote, a substantial similarity between the two songs that you would otherwise not expect to see if there wasn't copy. Now, again, this is, and usually a jury decides these, and, you know, there's experts brought in on both sides, musicologists. It's tough. I don't know. These are tough cases, the ones that actually go to trial. I don't know how common they are. I mean, you tend to hear about them in the news, like, you know, the Harrison case and the Stairway to Heaven case, and occasionally Ed Sheeran was just sued recently. So, you know, they make the news. Again, it's music's hard, and sometimes you will create something that sounds like something else unintentionally.
Absolutely. But let's play these two songs. Eli, let's start with My Sweet Lord by George Harrison. Why don't you play a little bit of that? Okay, let's play He's So Fine, which preceded it. That was the Chiffons, and there was a lawsuit, and that lawsuit went for years, is my recollection. What ended up happening?
You're right.
What ended up happening with that lawsuit?
Oh, Karen, we can. Yeah.
Yes.
I know a lot about this case.
In and out of the courts, right?
So Harrison, first of all, yes, he was sued by Bright Tunes, who owned the copyright. They were the publishers to the Chiffon song. Harrison admitted he had heard the Chiffon song, which was a hit in like 62 or 63, early Beatles days, so access was not an issue. He was sued in 1970 or early 71. The song was on his album, All Things Must Pass, which was his first post-Beatles album, solo album. The case was kicked around. It did not go to trial until 76. Just a lot of weird things with this case. I mean, it was a jury. It was a bench trial. The judge had actually composed an opera, so he knew something.
Oh my gosh.
He knew something about music. So it goes to trial. They tried settling the case. Harrison actually attempted to buy Brightunes out of receivership. They wanted to just own My Sweet Lord. Keep in mind, My Sweet Lord was a massive hit for Harrison. All the royalties went into escrow, so he didn't see any of the money. Long story short, of course, it goes, you know, there's experts on both sides. I suspect that if I've played, you know, My Sweet Lord on guitar, it's, you know, probably has similar chords to He's So Fine. The judge found that it was, by the way, most of these cases go to juries. This was a bench trial for whatever reason. The judge found that it was the same song with different lyrics. Ouch, not a good day for George. Not only does he lose all the money from My Sweet Lord, he loses some of the album sales from All Things Must Pass because some people, after all, bought the album based in part upon an infringed single.
Wow. Wow. So there so and there's a, so there's a lot of money involved in these things. And what about sampling, where you see an artist take a little bit of a song, the copyrighted song, and use it in their music? What is the law about that? Are they allowed to do it? Do they need to give attribution, or do they need to pay, or all of those things?
No, attribution doesn't pay the bills, Karen.
Nope.
Now, they should do that as well. So great question. Sampling is a whole, you know, at first it was kind of the Wild West on sampling. One of the early cases, Biz Markie was sued for sampling Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again, Naturally. And the first four words of the judge's decision were, thou shalt not steal. So it wasn't a good day for the late Biz Markie and his record label. The law is this, Karen, you need to clear all your samples. You always need, and there's no set rate. You just negotiate that. You need to clear it with the music publisher. And if you're using the actual recording, with whoever owns the sound recording, typically it's the record label. By the way, today, if you look up song credits, you know, particularly, you know, people use samples a lot, sometimes you'll see 10, 20 songwriters. Well, why did all those people get in the same room and work out the song? No, it's probably to clear samples and just pay them off that way.
That's right. We're here with Jim Jesse. He's the rock and roll lawyer. He is the lawyer at the intersection of law and music. And we're going to take a quick break in a minute. And when we come back, I want to talk about AI and how that is affecting music and the composition and the use of music. But we're going to take a break in just a few seconds. We'll be back. Yes, that song, I've Got Rhythm, is now in the public domain as of this January. And for that reason, I have our next guest on, Jim Jesse. He is the rock and roll lawyer, talking about the law and music. And I want to get right to the issue of AI. And I'm going to play something. My husband is a musician, and he took a little poem that he wrote, just a mm-hmm. few lines, and he threw it into AI. And he got this. Pretty nice, huh?
It is. It sounds good.
I mean, it sounds better than some of the music that I hear these days. and it was generated, you know, in just a few seconds and by AI. So let's talk about this. If we take that recording, can we copyright it?
Okay. The short answer is no. But the Copyright Office has come out and said that human beings have to be authors, which would seem to be common sense, but today that's not so much. Look, are humans, are people claiming authorship of things AI mainly created? I'm sure that is happening right now. Now, it was your husband's poem or lyrics, so, I mean, he's certainly a co-author of it, but AI may have come up with the whole song. I don't know how, if he just plugged it in and said, write me a song like in the vein of whatever, some artist. But technically, no, people, actual human beings, are supposed to be the authors of it.
Interesting. So what if I change it a little bit? What if I change a little bit of the chords and change a little bit of some of the background and the progressions? What, I mean, at some point, yeah. is it all AI, partially AI? Can I protect that as well? It just seems like there's no hard answer to this question.
Yeah, you're right, Karen, and that's where things get complicated. I think AI is a tool, and I suspect, you're going to take it and say, all right, I like that. I'm going to switch some chords up. I may change this lyrics. I mean, I've had it just as a test write lyrics, and the lyrics are pretty, can be kind of corny and cliched, but, you know, there's certain genres of music where that's a thing. So, and it shoots them out fast. So certainly you can use it as a tool. I'd say, yeah. And then if you primarily created it, yes. And by the way, both BMI and ASCAP, who represent songwriters, have said that they will take partially written AI songs as long as the person primarily wrote most of the song.
Interesting. And, you know, we've seen a lot of record labels, like the big ones, Sony and Universal and Warner, suing some of these AI startups, saying that they used copyrighted music not only to create music, but to train their whatever they do to make music. Do you know enough about what AI does? And can AI take other music and use it as a kind of instructor on how to create more music?
Well, a lot of this is being litigated. Yes, the record industry, I mean, going back to Napster, they do like to sue people. And look, they're protecting their copyrighted works. I mean, my understanding is ChatGPT was honed on the entire internet. So that's going to suck in things that are both copyrighted, things that aren't, like we discussed earlier, public domain things. A lot of the record labels have actually cut deals with some of the websites that maybe your husband used to create that song. Suno and Udio are two of the bigger ones. The question is AI fair use? In other words, can ChatGPT use some copyrighted material? And fair use is kind of a squishy topic in itself, but basically it allows people to use copyrighted material for education, news, criticism, etc. So that currently is being litigated. You know, if you train your AI on the entire internet, then it's going to be hard, I think, for even a large record label like Universal Music Group to claim, well, this particular sound recording, was used in something in ChatGPT. I don't know. It's just going to be hard. We'll see what happens. But another thing to think about with AI, too, is a lot of people are already using it. And if I think this, if the Supreme Court said AI is not fair use, my gut tells me that Congress would amend the fair use section of the Copyright Act to add AI as fair use.
Interesting, and I'm going to talk a little bit about changes in the law and proposed changes, but I want to just circle back with voice cloning. What if, I'm going to advertise something for the Super Bowl, and I want to clone Beyonce's voice because I can't afford her fee, and I put a song together with somebody who sounds like Beyonce using voice cloning, and everyone thinks it's Beyonce. Does she have a lawsuit against me for intending to deceive my listeners?
Yes, that has actually happened. Certain states, I know Tennessee is one, have passed restrictions. It's called the Elvis Act. People can look it up. That restricts, taking a person's name, image, and likeness and voice. Coca-Cola was sued by the Johnny Cash estate. They ran some commercial during college football games that used somebody that sounded like Johnny Cash, and the Cash estate is alleging, that they used his voice. Now, that case, I think, is still ongoing, so we'll see what happens with that. So, yeah, that's a tough one. I mean,
people imitate artists all the time, right?
Exactly.
And at what point does the law say You crossed the line. You're trying to deceive. You did deceive. Does it have to? Do you have to prove that there's actual deception and intent to deceive? Or is it just sounds so much like it, you must have intended that?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think that it sounds so much like it. You were trying to take advantage of Beyonce or Johnny Cash or whoever it is, and you can't pay them enough, you know, or they don't do it. They won't do it. So you're going to use a sound alike. And so celebrities are, you know, want to protect their image and their voice and their likeness, et cetera. And so, yeah, I think, you know, that is something that can happen. And again, a lot of these things, it's a judgment call. How much does it sound like the voice? You know, again, getting back to what we were talking about with copyright, plagiarism, and infringement cases.
And we see a lot of these lately with the polarized political realm we live in, where candidates are using music from different artists as their intro or as their kind of their campaign song, and you see these lawsuits being brought. How are these lawsuits going? I mean, can a candidate just use a song without proper attribution, without permission of the artist to use it?
Generally speaking, no. Like if you walk out to a certain song, I mean, it's a fine line. I mean, it is a public rally. Let's say there's music being played in public before, you know, a speaker comes out. I mean, that may not be per se a copyright violation, but if you're coming out to the same song, certainly if you use a song in a political ad without permission, that's a clear infringement. I've never seen a case go to trial because typically the politician will pull the song or stop using it or, you know, get permission. But generally speaking, if you're going to use another song to sort of, you know, at a rally or come out to or definitely in a commercial, you do need permission from whoever owns that song and or recording. And, you know, you need to pay them and they can say no. You know, the flip side of that is if I'm an artist or a songwriter, I don't want, you know, and someone's using my song and I don't hold the same beliefs as them, I don't want my name or song associated with it.
Understood. I get that clearly. And because you could be alienating half of your possible, you know, sales, you know, people who are going to buy your music. Quickly, parodies. How does that get viewed? You know, you see these people put together the funny takeoffs on the different songs. Do you have to pay the artist who wrote the song that you're parodying?
All right, Karen, this is the Weird Al section here.
Yes, it is. We are there.
We are there. Always gets back to Weird Al. Quickly, Weird Al always gets permission. He could argue parody, which is sort of a fair use exception. Google the Two Live Crew case for more on that. They went up to the Supremes. What Weird Al does, comedic lyrics, same melody, always gets permission because it's not a straight up cover. Obviously, he's using different lyrics. So Weird Al always gets permission for that. Again, you could argue parody, but parody is you're making some social commentary and it's sort of a smaller hoop you've got to jump through. So the easier answer is to just get permission as opposed to trying to argue it's parody.
We have been interviewing Jim Jesse, who is the rock and roll lawyer, and he educates lawyers throughout the country on these issues relating to copyright, fair use, and the things we've been talking about. Will you come on again and join us? I didn't know you were from Chicago. You have to be our music law regular.
Karen, I'd love to. Go Bears today.
Are you still a Bears fan?
Absolutely.
Good. Well, I will send good thoughts our way. Jim, how can our listeners reach you if they would like to talk to you?
You know, my website is probably the easiest way. It's Rock, R-O-C-K, N as in Nancy, Roll Law, ROLLLAW.com. And love to hear from people, love talking to other lawyers about this, and obviously musicians like myself about it as well. So that's probably the easiest way.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. Let's watch the Bears game, and you take care.